Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, December 8th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, coalition of conservationists, farm workers, and public health groups petition Trump administration to ban the use of drugs as pesticides. And EPA denies protections for Chinook salmon on the Oregon and Northern California coasts. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Last Monday, a coalition of conservationists, farm workers, and public health groups petitioned the Trump administration to ban the use of drugs as pesticides when they are crucial to human health, specifically drugs like oxytetracycline and streptomycin, which are used as antibiotics for humans, when used on produce to create a resistance. This leads to the drugs not working for their intended purpose in medicine. The coalition includes organizations like the Center for Biological Diversity, the Center for Food Safety, the National Family Farm Coalition, and the Pesticide Action Network, among others. KMUD News spoke with Nathan Donnelly, the Environmental Health Science Director at the Center for Biological Diversity, for more information on the effects of using these drugs on crops.
A lot of people don't know this, but some of the same medicines that we use to treat bacterial and fungal infections in humans are also used to treat similar diseases in plants. And so what we have going on right now in the U.S. and many other areas around the world is we're using antibiotics and antifungal medicines on agricultural crops. And it's leading to, you know, many thousands of pounds of these medicines being used across many thousands of acres. And that's a real worry, because when you use these medicines so much, it selects for bacteria and fungi in the environment that are resistant to those medicines. And so when people end up getting sick from those organisms and develop a disease, then it becomes much more difficult to treat. And so that's what this petition does, tries to get the EPA to come in and say, hey, these are important human medicines. We should not be jeopardizing their efficacy on using them on agricultural crops.
Drugs like oxytetracycline and streptomycin are used to treat different diseases in fruits, like blight in apple, pear, and stone fruit trees, and citrus greening.
Well, they treat different diseases in mostly in like apple and pear, different like stone fruit orchards. There's a thing called citrus canker. A lot of these things just kind of put little blemishes on the outside of the fruit and make it so that, you know, people don't tend to buy them. That much. They sort of make the fruit. Sometimes they can impact flavor and taste, but often it's mostly like, you know, they make the fruit a little bit ugly. And unfortunately, you know, we're sort of conditioned not to buy fruit that has any blemishes. So this is why they're used, is to sort of make these look a little better for consumers in the store.
The groups behind the petition itself have a long history of advocating against pesticide use and challenging the regulations around it. This petition specifically comes a little over a month after the World Health Organization published its annual report on antibiotic resistance worldwide. In the report, the organization specifically warned that, quote, antimicrobial resistance is outpacing advances in modern medicine, threatening the health of families worldwide, end quote. We spoke with Jessica Corbett, a senior editor at the publication Common Dreams, who's been following this story for a while, for more about the coalition and the petition itself.
So the groups behind this petition have a long history of challenging U.S. pesticide use and the regulations around it, particularly at EPA. And just after the World Health Organization put out its annual report on antibiotic resistance in general worldwide, this petition was presented to the Environmental Protection Agency by a group of conservation and public health groups saying, look, we're concerned about this issue, specifically using these medications that are essential to the health of humans on crops and creating this risk of antimicrobial resistance, which is effectively these superbugs that can't be treated by antifungals or antibiotics.
Campaigners have also called out the Trump administration for pandering to pesticide lobbyists and having ex-industry lobbyist Kyle Kunkler, who was a lobbyist for the American Soybean Association, in a key role at the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA.
So I think that this petition is a really great example of challenging the Make America Healthy Again campaign promises and post-Trump's second term administration promises that we've heard, specifically on pesticides. One issue that came up earlier this year was there have been a couple of Make America Healthy Again reports from the administration. The first one raised some concerns about health issues related to pesticide use, and specifically mentioned atrazine. And then from there, we saw a very intense lobbying push from the chemical industry that they've been open about. There's been reporting in the Washington Post and elsewhere about it, pressuring the administration for the second report, which came out in September. And in that second report, they really doubled down on the industry talking points and were called out by organizations like the Center for Biological Diversity, which is one of the groups behind this new petition.
The petition calls on the EPA to cancel the pesticide registrations under the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, which is the federal law that regulates registrations, distributions, sales, and the use of pesticides in the United States. Donnelly elaborates on the steps moving forward.
Yeah, so the steps moving forward is EPA has to consider and take into account this petition, and they need to respond to it. So this could take some time, you know, it'll probably take a year, maybe more, and then they need to respond to this petition, either saying they will grant it or saying they will decline it and deny it and give reasoning for that. So it's kind of a waiting game at this point. But if they deny the petition and we don't believe like they did so adequately, or if they just ignore it and don't respond to the petition, then we can take legal action to force their hand. So hopefully it won't come to that. But, you know, we're unfortunately in an administration right now that I don't think will take sufficient action, but they have the opportunity to. And if they are really, truly serious about making America healthy again, as they claim, this would be a great first step.
The amount of time for the EPA to respond can take anywhere from a couple of months to up to a year, as it varies with different cases. To follow Corbett's ongoing coverage of this issue, the website is commondreams.org. Today, the federal government denied listing the Western Coast Chinook salmon as threatened or endangered under the Endangered Species Act, ESA. The decision came after the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Fisheries Service, NOAA Fisheries Service, made a comprehensive review of the Oregon coast and Southern Oregon and Northern California coastal Chinook salmon and decided that protections wouldn't be necessary, as, quote, based on the best scientific and commercial information available, including the status review report and taking into account efforts being made to protect the species, we have determined that the Chinook salmon do not warrant listing, end quote. KMA News spoke to Jeff Miller, a senior conservation advocate with the Center for Biological Diversity, for more information about the petition.
So, you know, our original interest in protecting spring wren Chinook on the Oregon coast and Northern California coast. Spring wren, of course, you know, are the variant of Chinook salmon that they're early returning fish. So they come in early, they migrate in the spring, hold all summer, and then move upstream to fall in the fall to spawn. And they're always in less abundant than the fall run fish. And, you know, these are the big fish that gave the name king Chinook salmon. These are they're very large, fatty, because they're having to live off that fat when they're holding the stream for much of the year. And these are the fish that the orcas, the southern resident orcas, feed on, that depend on these fish. So we petitioned in 2019 to try to protect coastal spring wren Chinook, and the National Fisheries Service denied that petition, said that we can't consider spring wren Chinook as a separate entity, you know, as a separate population. So we repetitioned in 2022 for the entire Chinook population on both the Oregon coast and Southern Oregon, Northern California.
In Northern California, Chinook salmon can be found in rivers like the Klamath Trinity River systems and the Central Valley River systems. These salmon face similar, if not the same, threats as many other salmon and steelhead populations on the coast: dams and water diversions, logging operations, and more.
mostly due to dams and water diversions, clear-cut logging operations, and the associated roads that kind of bleed sediment and silt into salmon streams and use pesticides. And then, you know, other threats are interbreeding with hatchery-raised fish. There's certainly over-harvest in some commercial fisheries. Too many fish are being caught. Not enough wild fish are getting back to spawn. And then, of course, now, you know, throw in climate chaos. And with that comes poor ocean conditions where fish come back just not in good condition and much smaller. So
the Center for Biological Diversity disagrees with the statement that Chinook salmon are not at extinction risk. And Miller cites the Trump administration's gutting of the ESA for the federal government's response.
Yeah, I mean, the Fishery Service did an assessment of extinction risk. You know, I think we disagree with that assessment. They kind of, you know, they really downplayed a lot of the multiple threats, including the Oregon Coast Range has got pretty widespread clear-cut logging and road building. A lot of these watersheds have dams that prevent access to former spawning areas. And yeah, I mean, it's frustrating that the federal agency will not consider spring run salmon as a separate population, because there's really good genetic evidence and science the last 5 or 10 years showing that these fish are genetically, ecologically distinct. They spawn at different times, these different spawning areas in the stream. They're very different fish. Yeah, I mean, the Trump administration's got a full-out assault going on the Endangered Species Act. You know, they've trying to hamstring the act and change the definition of what it is to harm an endangered species. You know, Trump blew up the Columbia River Basin Agreement, which was, you know, pulled the feds out of an attempt to work with the Pacific Northwest states and tribes to restore salmon runs on the Snake River. Yeah, and so, yeah, this is not surprising, but yeah, it is unfortunate, you know, because these all of our salmon are in decline. Spring run in particular, we really could lose if we don't take action. So it's frustrating to, you know, to have this delayed.
The center will determine whether or not they can challenge the federal government's findings for Chinook salmon and whether Oregon and California protections are available to better protect the spring run of Chinook salmon. Ironically, 4 days ago on December 4th, the Fisheries Service published a report on how ESA protections have been moving other salmon populations into recovery.
Yeah, no, that one interesting thing, you know, just this same week, the National Marine Fisheries Service published a report on every West Coast salmon population that it listed under the endangered species, how they fared over the 5 years with the federal protection. They found that, you know, all of our salmon runs that are protected under the act in California, Oregon, Washington are actually proven. None have gone extinct, well protected, and they're rebounding fast. And, you know, populations that don't have federal protection. So the same week that they kind of, you know, provide the evidence that, hey, endangered species protections can work to stop, the, you know, slow the extinction and promote the recovery of salmon, they decline to protect a couple populations that we think really do warrant those protections.
For now, the spring run Chinook salmon remains off the ESA as activists look to the state for alternatives for protection. In state news, Trump administration to restore library funding in California across U.S. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
Librarians are breathing a sigh of relief as the Trump administration is quietly restoring $160 million in funding for libraries across the U.S., including $15 million for the Golden State. President Donald Trump signed an executive order in March to gut the Institute of Museum and Library Services, calling it unnecessary. But now a federal judge has declared that order unlawful. Anthony Chow is president of the California Library Association and a professor and director of the School of Information at San Jose State University.
I have heard a lot of excitement, but also skepticism, because a lot of people have been laid off. A lot of projects have been dismantled. And so while we're excited that the funds are returned, there is a little bit of skepticism in terms of whether it might be taken away again.
While the funding already approved by Congress must be dispersed, any future funding is up in the air. During his first term, Trump zeroed out funds for the Institute of Museum and Library Sciences every year, only to have them restored by Congress in the final budget. Funding from the Institute supports ebook collections, community impact grants, literacy programs, and workforce development. Meanwhile, California's 1,200 libraries are taking another $70 million hit after the Trump administration terminated the Digital Equity Grant Program. Chow says the program, created during the Biden administration, was designed to make sure no one is left behind in the modern era.
The act was designed to ensure that everyone, regardless of income, language, age, or geography, could fully participate in the digital world. Libraries were prepared to deliver much of this work through digital skills training, device lending, telehealth support, and essential online access.
The California Library Association is asking Governor Gavin Newsom to include $12.7 million in state funds for libraries in his January state budget proposal. Support for this reporting was provided by the Philanthropic Foundation, Carnegie Corporation of New York. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, New Democratic Coalition announces health plan, including protecting Affordable Care Act subsidies. KPFA's Shania Anderson reports.
The New Democrat Coalition announced a comprehensive healthcare plan this week. The plan focuses on securing the Affordable Care Act tax credits, strengthening Medicare and Medicaid, and addressing gaps in rural healthcare access. Coalition leaders say the plan is guided by three core principles. Every American should have access to qualify for affordable care, and healthcare services should be available near where people live. Coalition Chair and Congressman Brad Snyder says the group is focused on working across party lines, adding that moderation isn't just a political label, it's a practical way to get things done for people. The push comes as healthcare costs continue to climb nationwide, with premiums rising even as taxpayers cover more of the cost for subsidized plans. Congresswoman and Vice Chair for Policy Nikki Pozinski said rising healthcare costs are one of the country's biggest challenges, stressing the need for coverage that's both predictable and affordable for everyone.
And right now, those challenges are all about cost. It's wondering how you're going to afford the electric bill as temperatures drop. It's worrying whether your child will have access to a strong public education. And it's questioning if you'll be able to get affordable, high-quality healthcare when you need it. In the richest country in the world, these shouldn't be privileges but for a select few. They should be accessible and affordable for every person across the country. That's where the New Dems Healthcare Action Plan comes in. Our framework offers a new path, a better one, one that lives up to our core belief that every American deserves access to quality, affordable healthcare from providers they trust when and where they need it. It's a comprehensive strategy to address everything from insurance premiums and prescription drug pricing to vaccine misinformation and reproductive freedom. It also focuses on accessibility by strengthening Medicaid and Medicare and closing coverage gaps in rural and underserved communities.
The announcement comes as Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee holds hearings on rising healthcare costs. Lawmakers are examining why premiums have increased, even as taxpayer subsidies have grown, and are exploring solutions for seniors who will be affected when ACA tax credits expire in January 2026. Experts warn that healthcare isn't just a personal burden, it's a threat to the economy, particularly for small businesses facing high premiums and limited options. These concerns were front and center at the hearing where Republican Senator Bill Cassidy weighed in on the growing cost pressures Americans are currently facing.
I think it's pretty well established that American people are having a hard time affording health care. Prices are up for everyone, and the status quo is not sustainable. To be sure, we're having two conversations here. One, how do we lower healthcare costs going forward, period, just from here to eternity? And a very immediate conversation about January 1, 2026. What do we do for those folks, particularly those who are in their 50s and their 60s, on the exchanges for whom the premiums have become unaffordable and because of their increased use of healthcare have having to put more of their budget to this? Now, I'm speaking to both sides of my dais right now, my Democratic and Republican colleagues. I'm hoping that we can find a bill that can get 60 votes, that can fix the problem of the exchanges for January 1, 2026. It shouldn't be a Republican solution. It shouldn't be a Democratic solution. It should be an American solution.
Meanwhile, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont points to systemic corruption and compares the U.S. system to other countries, where health care is universal and largely free. Advocates across the political spectrum agree that ensuring access to doctors, hospitals, and medicine is essential to restoring security and integrity in the healthcare system, as Sanders, a progressive voice, emphasizes.
Hard to dispute that the current healthcare system is completely broken. It is dysfunctional and it is cruel. I think most Americans recognize that the function of the healthcare system today is to make the insurance companies incredibly wealthy, provide huge compensation packages to their CEOs, make the drug companies extremely profitable, provide huge compensations to their CEOs, massive amounts of stock buybacks. That's what the system is about. So for the drug companies and the insurance companies, the system is working really great, and that is what it is designed to do. If we're going to tackle the real issues, the first thing I think that we should do, Mr. Chairman, and I mean this very honestly, is have a panel with people from different countries around the world who are, A, providing health care to all of their people as a human right, and we are the only major country on earth that does not do that, and say to the people in France, in Japan, how do you manage to provide quality care to all of your people at half the cost that we do in the United States? What can we learn from other countries? I think that would be the first approach, and we can argue from there. But anyhow, I think the immediate task is to, as bad as the current system is, we don't want to see a doubling, tripling of premiums. We got to extend those, and then let's sit down and develop a system that works for the American people, not the insurance companies, not the drug companies.
As lawmakers continue discussions and debates, the New Democrat Coalition's plan aims to put Americans first, focusing on lowering costs, expanding access, and overall improving the quality of care. Lawmakers hope that bipartisan support can turn these proposals into action. For KPFA News, I'm Shania Anderson.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. More than 60 indigenous artifacts have been returned to Canada from the Vatican. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, First Nations, Inuit, and Métis leaders were on hand at Montreal's airport over the weekend to welcome them back.
There were 62 items in large crates on board the plane that landed on Saturday morning. Many Native leaders, as well as those involved in the repatriation efforts, were on hand. Some bowed as the crates were lowered onto the tarmac. For most, the objects on board were more than simply artifacts. One of those present was the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Cindy Woodhouse-Nepenak.
This is an important and emotional moment for many First Nations across this country. I hope it will also be an important moment for all Canadians to consider the history and the future of this country. Reconciliation isn't one stop here. Reconciliation is every single day doing this work.
Indigenous leaders in Canada have been calling for years on the Vatican to repatriate the artifacts in its collection. They met with Pope Francis in Rome in 2022 to talk about the legacy of the residential schools. At the time, they were also given a private viewing of some of the objects held by the church. They included embroidered gloves, a kayak, and a sling for carrying a baby. Some Indigenous leaders say it's not about bringing home objects or artifacts, but about bringing home memories, bringing home the dignity and power that was taken from their ancestors. The artifacts will not be available for public viewing until sometime early next year. Nepenak also says there are more artifacts in the Vatican Museum, so the work to repatriate them will continue. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
After finally being sworn in following a historic 7-week delay, Arizona Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva is using her first legislative act to fulfill a campaign promise she made to tribes across Indian country. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has more.
In 2015, her father, the late Raul Grijalva, first introduced the Save Oak Flat from Foreign Mining Act to protect an Apache holy site east of Phoenix by stopping a congressionally approved land exchange between the U.S. Forest Service and Resolution Copper.
So maybe the foreign company has millions and billions of dollars. We have a spirit.
A decade later, the fight isn't over. The controversial land swap has been put on hold until as early as next year, and the new congresswoman is taking on that mantle by reintroducing her dad's old bill.
The bar is very high. Again, this is new to me. Not new to the family, but new to me. I mean, I hear it even from Democrats. Mining is super important. Right, but none of the ore is staying here. It's all going to China.
As for Resolution Copper, the company tells KJZZ, Grijalva has been invited to meet their workforce to talk about what they call her highly concerning bill, which they say threatens hundreds of jobs today and billions of dollars for Arizona's future. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is concluding its emergency food assistance response this month. The tribe issued a declaration of emergency in October after the federal government announced the suspension of SNAP benefits for recipients in November. The declaration tapped millions of dollars in the tribe's reserve funds for cash assistance for Cherokee citizens and support for food pantries, meal sites, and food banks. According to the Cherokee Nation, the tribe delivered nearly $2 million in assistance to individuals and nonprofits. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and thanks to our reporters, Suzanne Potter, Shania Anderson, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.